catch them in the pasture, run them in a pen, work them on the Sundays, do it all again. Race them in the sand, buck them in the mud, drip a cowboy's sweat, bleed a cowboy's blood.
I'm Zeke Thurston, 2016 World Champion Saddlebrock Rider, and you're watching the Peppert Stewart Show.
That's what he told you. He said that. He said that you are here. I'm here. Randomness Randy is here. We're all here. All here for you. For you guys. You guys. You guys. That's what you guys. I watched the debate thing or whatever it was the other night. They're like, you guys. I'm here for you guys. There. It was fun. It was entertaining. It was very entertaining. I laughed a lot. Anyway, lots of stuff happened here. We're not debating anything. Or will we? You decide. 2024. All right, so here we are. Stuff is happening today. We got, you know him from Yellowstone, or the Carity Foundation Celebrity Cutting. Mo Brings Plenty is going to be on with us today. He's going to tell us about some stuff that he's going to be doing that's going to take place during the National Finals Rodeo. They're debuting some stuff up there. We'll get into that a little bit later. We'll tell you about that. We've got, like we said, the random stuff for you guys that everybody likes. We got that. PBR news, something happened. Somebody left one state, went to another state. Maybe they changed the logo, or did they just change the name? I don't know. It doesn't make sense. We'll get into that at some point. If you got an electric wolf, it might get you. We don't know about that. What's the oldest bottle of scotch you would drink or buy? We'll get into that, too. We got some more crazy stuff. If you're in Texas and a zombie attack happens, we got somewhere for you to go. So we're going to do that today. We got your horse news, cattle news. Winter is here. Today's show brought to you by Dry Shod. Dry Shod boots is what we're brought by today. So take a look at this, and I'll tell you something in a minute.
Introducing the Viper Stop boot by Dry Shod Footwear. The Viper Stop is a snake hunting boot that features hand-laid penetration-resistant rubber from top to bottom. 2 inch taller than our other models for extra protection from the elements, brush, and debris. It also features genuine veil camouflage print, DS1 molded outsole with outer and inner grip, nylon shank, the adjustable gusset style can be customized to fit larger calves for optimum comfort and protection, Wixit cool clad wicking air mesh lining wicks away moisture and allows the air to flow more than traditional air mesh. It also features a generous toe bumper and ample heel rest for easy removal. Dry Shod Footwear, the world's most wearable rubber boot.
Those boots, snakes. If you're looking for snakes, okay, that's a snake hunting boot. That's what I got. Okay, so I got a pair of those from Dry Shod. I got those boots, and they're snake hunting boots. Snake hunting in me is not a thing. I'm not snake hunting anything.
Okay, I thought I was learning something new about you, so yeah. You're not out there snake hunting.
Snakes, no. I will break my neck getting away from a rubber snake.
Well, these boots will help you.
They will. They will. That shank comes in handy, apparently.
Are they warm? They look like they'd be warm.
I think they are warm, so I got those boots, and the reason why... Those are the ones, because Dry Shod came out like, hey, you know, we enjoy the show, we'll be part of the show. Also, hey, check these out. So I was like, hey, let's do it. And the reason why I picked those boots is not because I'm a snake hunter. It's because I fix a lot of fence in the brush. And there's a lot of times that I'm out there fixing fence, and I run across snakes. Because it's, especially in the wintertime, I fix fence in the winter because of that reason. Snakes aren't out as much. So I like fixing fence in the wintertime. And there is times there's dead trees and trees on the fence, and you pull them off. And there's been times I've flipped trees over and found a little family of copperheads just, you know, chilling.
What do you do? Just say hi? The brush back on. Sorry to disturb you.
I am gone. I don't know how many times I've failed, rolled, running into stuff, trying to get away from there. But with these boots, now I'll feel more comfortable. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I'm going to go test them out to let you know if it works. just in the instance that it does happen, then we'll report that.
Maybe you need the disclaimer that they won't actually make you braver. No. But they will help you.
Yeah. Yeah. A little area of comfort. Okay. You know, they're a little taller than average, you know, average mud boot. And they're supposed to be stronger, which is good because it also said it helps with brush, which that's the other issue I had with my other mud boots was they were neoprene on the top. And so I'm in the brush and the briars and stuff and the barbed wire. I ripped holes all in them.
Yeah, because some of that stuff can get pretty tough itself. Yeah.
And so water gets in there. And then what's the point of wearing a waterproof boot if water's getting in it? So we're putting them to the test. Snake bite boots will be put to the test, but not for snake bites. That's not the test that I want to come back and report on.
I'm not going to intentionally try to test that out. Yeah.
That's not where I'm going with that. Oh, speaking of PBR, we touched on PBR. Okay, so the news broke that the PBR, the Oklahoma Freedom, has moved to Florida. And they now are called the Florida Freedom.
Okay, well, you can't call them Oklahoma Freedom in Florida.
Right. Okay. So now, they was like, you know what? Let's just change the name on top of the logo. So the logo's the same.
Okay.
Nothing changed.
Just the name change. Okay.
But you got to get more creative than that. It's just Florida. You got Florida Man in Florida. You got gators. You got swamps.
Yeah, I guess there's so much they could have done with that.
They could be the Florida Swamp Rats.
I think classic, just stick to what you know.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that.
It's like, well, I think we spent too much money on these stickers. If we can just change Oklahoma to Florida, we're good. But yeah, I saw that and I was like, wait a minute. The logo's the same. And so I pulled them up and that's why we've got that graphic. And it shows, only thing that changed was the name. So now what's Oklahoma going to do? What if Oklahoma wants to bring a team back? They can't be free anymore?
Oh, that's a good point.
So what are they going
to
do?
I guess they'll have to have the new logo. But I don't know.
I was like, you know, it's the marketing team and things that's going on up there in the PBR. You could at least come up with your own logo, a new logo for Florida.
Yeah, I guess I don't know enough about them to say that. But I mean, I can see what they're doing. They just want to provide everybody with a message that, hey, it's still us. It's still, you know, trusty old us that you know. Nothing's changed, just location. Maybe that's what they're trying to present.
I guess they're changing location. Oh, speaking of location, there's a PBR. I think you got a PBR video about location changes over there for the World Finals. I believe tickets are on sale for now for 2024, and there's a couple locations they're going to be at. So take a look at this. Be there. PBR World Finals is where you're going to want to be in 2024. Tickets on sale now. Buy them. Go buy some tickets. Before we get too far into this, we could probably sneak in. We got some cow news. We're going to tell you about your winter cattle. We're going to talk to you about horses. We got a very controversial topic we're going to get into at some point about to blanket or not to blanket your horse in winter. But I do think we ought to jump into some randomness with Randy and see what's happening over there.
All right.
So what do you got? What's your randomness for today?
I kind of want to ask you about this whiskey. Are you a whiskey drinker?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Do you like what do you normally drink? Anything special or?
It depends on where I'm at. I did get on a foreign whiskey kick while I was overseas and came back and drank a lot of that. But if I got to go to... I'll drink some Pendleton whiskey.
Okay. Now, I know there's a lot of aged whiskeys out there. Right. How would you feel about a 96-year-old bottle? Single malt from, man. I hope I pronounced this distiller right. Is it Macallan?
I don't know because I drink a lot of coffee, so I drink a lot of milk. So dates are real prevalent in in my my drinking of Floods. So if it's 96 years old, it's going to be one of two things. It's going to be so watered down, it's going to be terrible, or you're going to take a drink and pass out.
Oh, see, I was thinking it might just be honey at that point.
So I don't know.
So it's there's a bottle.
Okay.
96-year-old bottle of single malt going up for auction. They're expecting an estimated price of about 1.2 million pounds. So that's about $1.4 million here. Yes. I don't know. Who do you think? Do you think you would, if you had the money and you could just, that was spare change for you, do you even think you'd spend $1.4 million on a bottle of whiskey?
I don't think I could do that. I don't think because you have to bring it down to, like, you know, relative terms where you think, okay, if you're at the point where you're spending $1.5 million on a bottle of whiskey, how would you break that down? So you would think, okay, so in layman's terms, would you go buy a, say, $10,000 bottle of whiskey? I'm like, I couldn't do it. Because it's one bottle. It's one bottle. And then once you open the bottle, if it's terrible.
Well, it has been, it's not that it's been sealed this long. It has been reconditioned. Oh. So the distillery did recondition it. That included replacing the cork, applying new glue.
Oh,
so they,
I'm out.
It's not that it's been I'm sealed out. This
you
whole
opened
time.
It, you opened it, you ruined it, you but drained there were, it, you drained it, and you put new stuff in it.
But this is your one chance, though, because there were only 40 bottles made.
I'm out. They opened it. They wrote it. They didn't run the. They didn't run the surprise.
They ruined the surprise. They didn't try it. They didn't let anybody taste it.
But how
they
do just, we know?
That's true.
How do we know?
Do you think if you worked for them and you knew this auction was coming, would you sneak in a little?
If they're redoing the cork, and there's somebody's back there is going, let me get just. I got to get a little taste of this.
How disappointed would you be if you did that and then it tasted like just the cheapest well whiskey you've ever had? I'm sure this is.
Okay, so to put it in perspective for you guys,
okay,
each shot out of this whiskey bottle is going to cost about $41,000 per shot. So just put that in your perspective. Yeah. Each little glass you drink, it's $41,000.
You know how many lawyer fees that they'll help me out with?
Yeah. I mean, I think my calculation is correct if that's 1 million. But yeah, that's a little insane.
Man, that is a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch and see what that actually goes for.
Yeah. We're going to talk to Mo Brings Plenty here in a little bit, but before that, he's partnered up with a guy who sings some songs, and he's got a song for you guys to check out. So let's do a little music break here. Check out this little tune here from it's called White Buffalo from Iron Music. Take a gander at this, and then we'll come back, and we'll probably be talking to Mo himself.
She came in like a lightning strike, rolled out like thunder on the plains. That girl's a wildfire, when she gets done, nothing's the same. God knows I've tried, but getting over her's like fencing in an eagle, flying with an angel, finally finding gold at the end of the rainbow. Push Cloudy Mountain into Devil's Canyon. That would bring her back, but it won't, so I'm sending signals up in smoke. Cause I need help fixing what she broke. I got a better chance, I know, of finding a white buffalo. But I swear I hear them all the time. Her voice is in the wind, so these reins are in my hand tonight. Praying she might change her mind, like thinking I ain't out of mine. Or fancying in an eagle, flying with an angel, finally finding gold at the end.
want, so I'm saying it. Signals up in smoke, 'cause I need help fixing what she broke. I got a better chance, I know, of finding a white buffalo. What she wrote, I got a better chance, I know, of finding a white buffalo.
All right, that was White Buffalo's Ian Music. That's his off his second album that's coming out. He's also doing a cinematography debut with this, with the documentary White Buffalo, Voices of the West. It's going to premiere December 6th during the Wrangler National Finals in Las Vegas. And they're moderating the panel discussion between those guys. You're going to have music. Music's going to be there. Dougie Hall, Yellowtail, discussing this, and the man with the plan, in control, Mo Brings Plenty. What is going on, Mo?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay. Did he mute? Unmute?
He doesn't even have it.
He's got to unmute himself. But, so there's going to be a documentary is going to expand the concept of this album he's putting out, White Buffalo. And that's Dougie Hall. If you know Dougie Hall, if you know, he's a bucking horse guy up there. They're Native American folks from the Blackfoot tribe. Dougie Hall. You got horse trainer. He's an actor from the Crow tribe. Stephen Yellowtail and a cowgirl from the Blackfeet Nation, Sammy Joe Bird, with music. They're all going to be on this roundtable panel discussion that's going to be led by Mr. Mo Brings Plenty. So it's going to be something to see there when this transpires. I think we're having an audio issue. Fun with live stuff.
And that panel with all of those people, that's going to be, that's at the December 6th yes. debut, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's going to be something to see. Also to hear if we had audio. That's fun with live. Fun with live. Man.
Okay. He just dropped out. I think he's going
to try. Okay, let's see if we can do a little reboot here. Most of you folks are going to know Mo from Yellowstone and the charity celebrity cutting that he's competed in a couple of times. I was going to ask him about that, if he's going to be doing that again. And he does a lot of work with films now. A lot of consulting work and stuff in films, so we can get the audio to pop up.
There you go.
There we go. Dang. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
There you are.
I can hear you.
Okay. There you are. All
right. How's it going, Pepper? How you been, bud?
Oh man, doing good, man. Doing good. Getting ready to catch you at Carity again. Are you coming back to compete this year?
I believe I am.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Yeah, I seen Four the other day talking about he's coming to defend his high score titles. He's out for everybody this year.
I'm gunning for him.
Yeah. So tell us about this panel that you guys are going to do with this White Buffalo, Voices of the West.
You know, I'm super excited about this. I mean, you know, because when it comes to Indian country, You know, when people think about cowboys, they don't think about us as American Indian folks being that as well. You know, we're ranchers. We've horse culture has been a big part of our cultural identity. And so we really, this is something that I think it's been well overdue, and I'm super excited about it. I mean, we have a great panel. We have Sammy Joe Bird. We have Stephen Yellowtail. We have my bro, Dougie Hall. I mean, you know, everyone's going to be there, and it's going to be super exciting. And I'm looking forward to having that conversation with everyone and just letting them tell their side of the story. And this means a lot. You know, I think it's going to open up some doorways for we have a wide range of very talented Indian musicians that are country singers as well. And so I think, you know, Mr. Moonsek's going to kind of pave the way and create a passageway for them to also go through. So I'm really super excited about it.
And with your work, if you want to tell us a little bit about the work you do, you know, a lot of people know from Yellowstone, but then a lot of people don't know. What they don't know is a lot of the consulting and behind the scenes stuff that you do on other shows. If you want to tell us about that.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Taylor asked me, he said, We need someone who understands culture, and I believe you're the guy. And I said, most definitely. And so I jumped on board and helped finish up 1883. And then, of course, got in behind the scenes, which I've always helped out a little bit, because the American Indian consultant there before, he's a great guy. I did stuff with him, helped him out. You know, and so I just end up taking over on Yellowstone, and also in 1923. And 1923 was probably one of the toughest ones for me, because it, you know, it just brought back an era of what a lot of our people had been through. And but it was also very, very healing, you know, in the process. And so it was good. We had a great group of individuals. Of course, Taylor has a great group of individuals that you know. The crew is unbelievable. And so Taylor is a mastermind behind putting us all together, and it works. It works really well.
A lot of people have asked me about, asked me about 1923 and when they watched it and what they'd ask. And I was like, well, you know, when I get around to running to Mo again, I'll ask him about it. Is they've asked about the school scenes and the schools, and like, did this really happen? Did this really take place in those times?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you had to look back. General Pratt was the one who developed this here program. And it was basically, the quote is, the famous quote is, you must kill the Indian to save the man. Mm-hmm. And so these boarding schools began to pop up throughout the country. And a lot of these kids were sent, stripped away from their families and shipped off to faraway schools. And if their parents tried to prevent their children from being taken away, you know, they can be prosecuted and or executed. And so it was a tough era for our culture, our language, most definitely our language. There's a lot of tribes that lost their language due to that process. And, you know, but when the boarding schools, when they closed, the viciousness of the mentality of it did not end, you know, because a lot of those individuals that been through that end up bringing it back to our reservations, and it became our own. I'm sorry, I hate to say that, but it, you know, some of it became our own that became abusive to a lot of our own people and our communities.
And when you're not working in the movie stuff, are you still, I know I'd listened to some stuff you've done before with Clinton Anderson and stuff. And so are you still out ranching, and you still riding colts and doing that when you get some time off away from the screens?
I laid off colts a little bit because then I just, you know, you want to be committed to it. And I just feel that I don't have the time to get anything started at the moment. And so, but you know, we have other projects that we got going on. We're trying to get done before winter sets in. We still have to get our cows worked and get them moved. So I'm hoping that happens next week. You know, we did a bunch of fencing the last few days, and now we're getting ready to pour a concrete slab for a shelter. And so a lot of stuff going on right now at the old Hacienda, and so it's keeping us pretty busy.
I was going to ask this. So this documentary, The Voices of the West, can you speak a little about how that came together? Did you have a general idea what you wanted it to be, or did it like develop as you went along?
You know, honestly, it was basically just going to be a music video. And they saw something that it could be more than that. And so they end up taking it a step further and making it into this documentary. Again, I'm super excited, but I didn't have nothing to do with that. I'm just there to help on her panel and stuff and kind of navigate that. But it's for me, I'm super excited about it. Just from what I've seen of it, I'm pretty stoked. And I believe the audience is going to be excited about it as well. You know, there's a lot of learning information in there as well. There's definitely a lot of cowboy culture, but it's intertwined with American Indian culture. And so people are going to be able to get to see what Indian country is all about when it comes to the ranching world. You know, we still do things kind of no different than, you know, a lot of the folks down in Southern Texas, you know, the Mexicans down there or the black cowboys. I mean, everyone has culture. Even at the 4-6ers, there's a lot of culture there. And so, I mean, it's just really exciting and good to see culture. And when you get to see that culture intertwined with what we know as the Western world, you know, people learn from that. And some people can, you know, take from that and then put it into their own programs and, you know, it may improve their programs a little bit more. So we're always looking for a niche, you know, and a way to help ourselves out. And anyone that is in the agricultural business understands and know that this is a challenge. You know, it's like living in Vegas 24/7 and betting it all. And so it's really good. You know, I see things that other people do that, you know, man, maybe if we try that, maybe that might help us out and cost, you know, cut a little bit of cost. And you know, if we do that, then maybe it's going to make our calves a little less stressed, you know, when we work them and things like that. So we're always looking for something to improve our own operations.
Now, have you been out, now that he's got 4-6ers, have you been out there, riding some of those horses and check some cows out there?
No, I've been out there and I've looked at his cows. I mean, there was when we were working on 1883, we're out there up at Dixon Creek, and man, he has some nice looking bulls out there. And I was like, man, I'd sure like to bring a trailer down and load up a bull or two and take him home. I did go check out their horse facility. What an amazing facility.
Oh, yeah.
A great group there. I mean, boy, it's a smooth operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a wild oiled operation. And so it's great to see all of that. You know, it makes me feel like I'm a squatter on my little place that we got going here. But one day, I mean, you know, there's little things there that I know that I could do here and make improvements. And we've been trying a few things here and there. And so it's really good. It's all, you know, everything's about learning and helping each other out and just sharing ideas, you know. And so it's really good. It was amazing to see that whole operation. Is such a legendary place, you know, historical place, and it's glad. I'm thankful that Taylor ended up with it, because it's going to remain what it is.
Right. And it's a nice place. I've been out there. It's probably been 10 years since I went out there, but we picked some horses out there one time, and I was like, man, this is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, if you get a chance to go to their horse sale, you got to go check out their horse sale as well. It's amazing.
Now I saw the Mo costume was pretty popular around Halloween this year. I seen a lot of kids and a lot of, you know, young Indian kids that were dressed up. And so now you've got all these kids looking at you. So now all these kids are looking up to you. They see you on the screen. They see you at the events. What advice do you have these kids that they say, hey, man, he's, you know, I'm Indian. He's Indian too. That's what I want to do. So what do you tell these kids?
You know, I tell them to always believe in yourself. You know, the whole world could be against you, and you're going to have moments and days that you feel like the world's against you. But as long as you believe in yourself, you're always going to be able to walk with your head held high, and you're going to always be progressive and be successful.
All right. Well, we'll leave it on a high note right there with you, Mo. Man, we appreciate you dropping in and visiting with us. Let us know what you got going on and about this Voices of the West. And looking forward to checking out that panel and hopefully to see you over there in Fort Worth in December.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, my friend. And you all have a wonderful evening and take care. It's good visiting with you. Thank you.
See you. Yeah. Always a good time, man. That's a great dude right there. Mo brings plenty.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. I want to hear about that Voices of the West documentary. Yeah.
That's going to be good because I was telling you earlier, I've never been a podcast person, never listened to podcasts. I got my photographer, he was watching over here a while ago, to turn me on to, hey, you got to listen to these podcasts that Clinton Anderson's doing. Because I knew Clinton Anderson from his old show on RFD, and I used to watch it all the time, his training shows and stuff like that. But now he has this podcast, and I was like, I don't listen to that stuff. I was like, I don't even listen to my own stuff. I don't even watch my own stuff. I don't want to see it because all I'm going to do is pick it apart and throw a stick at it. So I don't want to do it. And so I had to go to Colleen outside of Waco.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, I got XM radio, and I listen to stuff on there, and then I listen to the regular radio. And I was like, you know what? Let me just pull up my Spotify and see. So I listened to every single episode that he had because it was real. It's called Real, Raw, and Uncut. And it is that. And he's had all these different people on there, and he asked them, he pretty much gets their life story, how they are, or how they got started, where they are, to where they become. And I caught the Mo one on there the other day. I said, man, that's great. And a lot of people know he was done. He did his acting stuff, and he was done. Yellowstone came up and changed everything.
Yeah, so you never know when you're going to catch that.
You never know.
Second chance, or, well, I don't want to call it that, but redirection.
I'm still waiting on catching that chance. Oh, speaking of catching that chance, Bass Reeves came out Sunday, or November 5th, whenever you're watching this. But anyway, the first two episodes came out, and man, it's going to be good. I only worked one episode of it. I don't know which one, so you just got to watch. But like Taylor Sheridan, he's killing it with shows. Mm-hmm. And it's, have you watched? Did you watch Bass Reeves?
No,
I didn't see Bass Reeves, but I did see 1883. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And man, I haven't even seen Yellowstone yet. I am addicted. I splurged on that whole series.
I'm telling you, it's good. It's good stuff. I mean, his the way his mind works, in the stories, and the way he puts them on film, it's crazy.
Yeah,
you gotta be there. You gotta be there. Where else do we want to be? We got some more randomness there, don't we? What else we got? What else are we looking at?
Let's see. Let's go with the. This picture is actually kind of terrifying. We have the picture of the wolves. So this story, it's out of Japan, and there's been some consequences to the dwindling natural predators.
Okay.
So I guess in a way you could call this scarecrows to scare away the deer and the monkeys and bears. And so they have these mechanical wolves.
Mechanical wolf.
Yeah, that I hope we have a picture of this, right? There's these red lit eyes. It's just, it's kind of scary looking.
And does it play basketball?
No, but it does make noise. It howls. I hope I didn't just misread that. But so they have a group of these.
Okay.
And it does warn it. It says, "You're not getting away with this."
Apparently, so the wolf talks.
Yeah, the wolf talks at 60 decibels. It moves, the neck swivels. I don't even know that I could have finished this article when I first saw it, because I was like, I don't even know what I would do if I was going down the street, or, you know, you're kind of in a rural area and you got this scarecrow out there.
Right.
I think I would do what you do with the snakes. I would just grab my stuff and go.
There's a wolf and it's telling me to get out of here. Yeah. So I'm like, what?
I mean, if it's something that can scare away bears,
could you imagine?
It's gonna scare me away.
Could you imagine if that was close to Grandma's house?
Oh no, poor Grandma.
Little Red Riding Hood would be in trouble.
Oh no.
Yeah, so that thing looks terrifying.
Yeah.
Look at the picture of that thing. Yeah. So it was a mechanical, and when I saw the picture of that, I was like, that looks kind of like the mechanical cow that they used to train the cutting horses with. And I was like, I wonder what would happen if somebody put one of those mechanical wolves on there.
Oh no.
What the horse would do. Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to be next to the poor horse.
And get the heck out. Speaking of horses, let's make everybody mad with horses right quick.
All right. You got something controversial?
Yeah, we'll jump into the we'll get the ranch and rodeo out of the way right quick before we dive back into some more randoms. We got a lot of good random stuff. All right, so let's do this. It's controversial. Everybody gets mad. It's about as controversial as the to stall or not to stall, which I also got a perspective on that. Listen to that podcast. To stall your horse or not to stall your horse. And I'm against stalling your horses, but also I don't have $1 million horses, so it's a different deal. But if you got it, damn it, I got to get into it. Okay, so.
What would the reasons be that you would agree to stall your horse?
If you stall your horse, that's fine if you're using your horse every day and the horse is being worked. If you're working your horse every day, because that's what stalls were intended for in the old days, 1800, 1700, 1600, whatever, is because you used your horse every day. So you got home, your horse was tired. You put it in the stall, went to sleep. Next day, you went and worked your horse or went to town or whatever. So that makes sense. But what happens is a lot of these people live in town. They go buy a horse, and they go board it at some place for $1,000 a month, and it lives in a stall every day for a month. And then they go out there to get their horse to ride it the one weekend a month they go ride the horse, and the horse bucks them off or does something. Well, the horse has been stuck here. He wants to get out and stretch his legs. So if your horse is out there running around, stretching his legs and doing stuff, then he's more relaxed. But if you're pent up in a stall, you know, 2 weeks straight, you get out, you want to stretch your legs.
Yeah. Like
if you're sitting in a car for a road trip, you get out, you stretch your legs, you move around, you do that. Well, when the horse does that, they freak out and fall off. And now something's wrong with the horse. So that's why I say if you want to stall your horse, that's fine, but be sure you're using the horse. And that was something he mentioned. He's like, yeah, we got $1 million horses here. We can't just turn them all out and let them run. But we're working our horses every day. So your horse is doing something. So it's not like it's in jail.
Stall needs to be more of like a break room. Yeah. Than a spend all day there. Yeah, right. I think I agree with you on
and
all
so,
that.
And that's how I look at it. Now, the next controversial topic I'm going to hit today is to blanket or not to blanket. As winter is approaching, a lot of people, especially these people I'm talking about that stall their horses in these towns and know nothing about them, will go put blankets on their horses.
Okay.
And so there is a university that did a study on this. And it says, you know, now that the days are short and the nights are long and it's cold, the short answer is no, not to blanket your horse.
Oh, really?
I've had horses since I was born, and I've never put a blanket on a horse. In the wintertime, ever.
I mean, I've
never. Their horses have been around long before we have. They've been just fine. They didn't go to Tractor Supply and buy blankets to put on.
Yeah. I mean, they were okay before blankets.
And where we're at, if the horses are out in the big pasture with, you know, eating hay or whatever, if it's that bad, they'll go in the woods and get in the cedars and cedar trees, and they'll, you know, but it's not. So they're out there eating. I've got pictures. I didn't pop any up here of my horses, but I got some random people horses off the internet that I found out there playing in the snow because it's cool out there. They feel good. They're playing.
Yeah, I mean, animals play.
And so anyway, how your horse stays warm? Let's see. Horses stay warm in cold temperatures. Your horse's coat is comprised of two hairs. You got two types of hairs, long hair and short hair.
Well, that would be two types.
That would be the two types of hair. Everyone has long hair and short hair.
But do you have a soft, fluffy undercoat?
I'm only ducks, right? Yeah. So the short, you know, your fluffy, soft, fluffy stuff up under, that keeps you warm. And that's what keeps them warm and keeps the rain off. You know, they collect moisture from sweat. And the softer, fluffier hair traps in the warm air between them and keeps them warm. So how much winter hair does a horse get? Well, they start growing in August. And the thing with the hair is they get fluffy. They fluff out. Well, if you put the blanket on the horse, then their hair is not fluffy anymore to protect. Like it said, it just compresses down their sides. So it lays down. So it's not doing its job.
Like, yeah, I can't keep the heat in by
so
itself.
It's getting cold. How much does nutrition play? Yes, you got to feed them. Here we go. This is the good part. How much cold can a horse tolerate? The Canadian study, which way up there was colder, horses can tolerate temperatures down to, ready for this? 5 degrees. Five. Oof. Before they show any drop in body temperature. Rain and wind are important in that factor. The rain is going to flatten their coat, which prevents the undercoat from making them warm. But if you put a blanket on them, they get all wet. They're not going to dry, and they're going to stay wetter.
Right. I feel like the blanket's just going to make it wet if the blanket gets wet.
So they decided to give you these tips, just the tips. When don't I blanket my horse? When it has a natural winter coat, when he's healthy and in good body weight, which body weight is a big thing. No ribs showing, no hip bone showing. When it is not too windy or rainy, and if the temperature is above 5 degrees. If it's below and it's freezing and you're into blanketing horses, then you would. When do I need to blanket your horse? And this is the big stickler for you stall horse people and show pen horse people. When he has been clipped for winter, stop shaving your horses. Stop shaving them. What is wrong with you? Why are you shaving your horse? They shave their horse. Like you shave your head, they will shave their horse for the shows.
I mean, does it really make that big of a difference? Maybe I'm just not familiar.
It's a cosmetic deal, but stop shaving your horses. Shave your armpits or something. Shaving your horses. You do blanket if you've clipped him for winter, which stop clipping your horses. That's mostly, I think the clipping is more of a halt to horse deal.
Okay.
Because it's more of a, their show is more of a look at me type deal. So they clip those and they cut their mane really weird where it's like really short and looks dumb. Oh, yeah. Looks stupid, but they do it.
They're in their little horse beauty contest.
Yeah. When he's sick. Well, if he's sick or injured. If he's underweight. If he's underweight, don't put a blanket on. Feed him. If he's an old horse with weight issues, okay. If he's been recently moved to a colder climate, okay. When it's rainy or windy or both, and when there's no available shelter. Here's some general guidelines. If you body clip your horse, start blanketing, start blanketing your horse when the temperatures get below 60. Or if it's raining or windy, because your horse may get cold.
That really shows what a difference that hair makes. If normally, if they're not clipped and it's down to 5 degrees.
They're fine.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, but if you shave it and the wind's blowing, oh no, better go put the blanket on my horse. Moderate hair coats, you blanket when the temperature goes below 40. And heavy hair coats, when temperature goes below 30. Just stop blanketing your horses. It's dumb. Or not, I don't know. Send me an email, tell me I'm wrong. I've never blanketed a horse ever. It froze here not too long ago for the Snowmageddon or whatever we had. I didn't blanket anything. They were fine.
I mean, if they've got shelter to get out of the wind, and I mean, they're horses.
Survival of the fittest. Survival of the fittest. I don't want a weak horse. Come on, guys. All right, so what else we got? We got cow stuff. Let's do some cow stuff real quick since we already upset all the equestrian folk. Let's upset the... cattle folk. Preparing your cattle for winter. Put blankets on them.
Oh, so you do blanket cows?
Yeah. I want to see that. I want to see those cows running with blankets on them. Of course, I'm sure there's some that probably do it.
Horses are going to stand around and stare at them, give them dirty looks.
Why's that cow got a blanket on? Let's see here. Here's some quick facts. Cattle expected to live outside during the winter should remain outside to adjust to the changing conditions as winter approaches. And I was reading that, and I was like, cattle that are expected to live outside. But there are places, and I know when we were in England over there, there are places that have big barns because their farms are not as big as they are here.
Okay.
So they're small. Like a 5-acre farm is massive.
Oh. So yeah, that's tiny for us.
And so over there, they have the huge barn. So like in wintertime, they just bring the cows in the barn.
Yeah, I was picturing the same. I had the same problem when you were reading that sentence. I was picturing in my head. I was like, I'm picturing a whole herd of cattle going into a barn. Like, I'm like,
well, you got like a, you know, you got like a doggy door for your pup. You got to do a cow door for your cow. They come and watch TV with you.
Yeah, just a massive barn, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
A windbreak is the single most important factor for success for your cattle riding out the winter weather, which is always good. Cedar trees are best because cedar trees do not, like other trees, shed their leaves. Mm-hmm. Cedars do not. So if you plant a lot of cedars, it's a windbreak.
Okay.
A natural windbreak. What else we got? Building a bedding, have a bedding pack behind your windbreak. Okay, well, that's the same thing. For it's dry. Stable body conditions to make sure you're feeding them. In extreme cold, they need more calories to maintain their condition. During severe weather, water access can be compromised, so make sure you can get water to them. See, cattle work to maintain a constant core body temperature of 101 degrees. During the winter months, they need more for their body heat. Let's see if I got anything that's more importanter than all this wrangling. Acclimation, make sure they're acclimated to the weather. Make sure you had a windbreak, we did that. Bedding, make sure you got a bedding. Body condition, we'll talk about that. Make sure they got plenty of meat on their bones. Feed, make sure you're feeding them. They got enough feed to eat, so they keep it on their bones. Water, make sure they got plenty of water and it's not frozen. My non-favorite is avoid drifting snow. Yeah, I'll pass on that. And foot tractions, make sure they're not in a mud hole. Drifting snow. What year was it that we had that huge freeze here?
Was it 21? A couple of years ago.
20 or 21. I think that was the winter that I realized that living anywhere north of Oklahoma was out of discussion. Because I'd been out there busting the water. I was out there in the pools with a pickaxe busting water. Didn't work. We ain't got a chainsaw. We're cutting
chainsaw. The ice
with a chainsaw, cutting out squares of water with a chainsaw. And I'd gotten thirsty, so I went back to the barn. And in the fridge in the barn, I grabbed a Gatorade about like this.
Okay.
I got out of the barn, and I walked outside the barn. It instantly froze. Instantly froze.
Yeah, that's too cold for me.
And I was like, what is happening here? I've never seen that before, ever. Yeah, it instantly froze. And when I was pickaxing the pools, when I would hit the water and it would come back on me, it would automatically freeze. Yeah.
Wow.
It was the weirdest thing I ever saw. I was like, I don't ever want to do that again.
No.
Ever. It was so cold. Everything froze. What else we got that's random?
Oh, let's see. Do you have a zombie apocalypse plan?
I think where I'm at, I may be good, but it depends on where I am.
Okay. Well, there was a study done by Wanderoo, and they looked at a couple things. They looked at transportation options, interstates, farms and livestock area, ammo, and for all of these reasons, mm-hmm. Fort Worth hit the top five of the best places to be in the zombie apocalypse.
All right.
And it was because of those reasons. We have... It says 36 interstates coming in and out of town. It's got a large, 76% of our state's land is dedicated to farms and livestock. So we're going to be okay. There's not going to be any shortage of beef, corn. We'll be fine. We'll still have our barbecue going on. We do, as you know, have a lot of ammo stored around.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Medical facilities. We rank pretty high on that. So we come in as the fifth best place to be.
The fifth best
place? Can you got any guesses on where might be a better place?
A better place than Fort Worth?
Yeah, better than Fort Worth. I'll tell you, they're not in Texas. Fort Worth is the only one that made the list in Texas.
I don't know where else you'd want to go to avoid a zombie.
Well, there's some nearby. There's Tulsa or Oklahoma City. Those are both on the list.
I don't know if I'd want Oklahoma City.
Yeah. There's one that actually kind of surprised me. Jacksonville, Florida. That made number three.
How?
I was a little shocked by that. I guess with those factors, they must just meet it with the storage or transportation in and out. The best place to be, Kansas City. Hmm. And it doesn't, I hate that this list, the article didn't specify.
Why?
Which side of Kansas City, but Kansas City.
Huh. Yeah. Wonder how they come up with that.
There are worse places.
And where would that be?
Now, Again, nowhere in Texas is the worst place. Okay. I feel like you'll be okay if you stay around here.
All right.
The worst places, 3 of the 5 are in California.
That's the worst place to be right now.
Yeah, the number one worst place is San Francisco. But Long Beach, California, and San Jose made it. The other two, New York City, which makes a lot of sense. That zombies are going to spread very quickly. Yes. But I feel like maybe it would be the worst place if you were there, but it might be the best place for everyone that's not there for that to be where it starts, because we can kind of quarantine them in pretty easy.
I think I saw a movie about that.
Yeah, and then Boston is also Boston. One.
That's too far. It's cold up there. We just talked about the cold. I can't go.
You can't go to Boston.
I'm stuck down here in Fort Worth fighting the zombies.
Yeah.
Because that's not where I'm going. We got, before we dive back into some more, let's get this out of the way. Coming up in the 19th, is November 19th a Sunday? I believe it's Sunday.
Yes, I think
so. That this is happening. There was a private premiere of the Lane Frost documentary. So we've got a trailer for that. If you remember back 2 years ago, 2021, we had these guys on the show talking about this documentary that they were making, and that it was going to be available that December. Well, fast forward 2 years, it's finally available.
They meant this December.
Yeah. So they, we'll get it there. We'll get there. And so they had the private premiere in Oklahoma, which is like a family deal in Oklahoma. And then coming up in the Cowtown Coliseum in the Stockyards, this Sunday is going to be the first, I guess, worldwide premiere.
Okay.
Or open premiere to everyone else to come out there and watch this documentary on Lane Frost. And those that don't know, Lane Frost is the story of 8 Seconds. The movie 8 Seconds is the Hollywood version of Lane Frost's life. And this is going to be the actual version of his life. So I'm real interested to see how this transpires. Yeah. So check this out.
Every bull rider wants to be at the daddy of them all. And every bull rider wants to win this bull ride.
Lane's a world champion. You don't expect a world champion, you know, to die in one of the biggest, most prestigious rodeo in the world.
Everybody said the same thing. It didn't look that bad. That's what everybody said.
And you see Lane, he's up and crawling. And I'm thinking, how did this happen? He's up. He's good. And that bull steps on his shaps as he's crawling. And as he moves flat,
I think of how hard it was for me, but then I have to think of how hard it was for Tuff.
There's not a good way or an easy way to tell a mother that they're... that their son's dead. They just placed him, laid him in the airplane. He was just like laying right next to me.
Lane did as much in his 25 years as a lot of people do in a lifetime. You know, he had a full life. He did exactly what he wanted to do.
I think it's important to keep Lane's story alive because you're never gonna have another story like it.
My whole career, pretty much everything's been modeled by Lane Frost.
The guy literally revolutionized how people viewed bull riders, how bull riders handled and viewed themselves, what it meant to be a true professional in the sport. I mean, he changed everything.
Oh, I'm Dr. Skip Ross, physician in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Been covering Cheyenne Arena for 35 years. On July 30th, 1989, I was the arena doctor the day Lane Frost got killed.
It's been a long time, but I'm going to tell you this. I would put money that there is not going to be a dry eye in that place when it's over.
Yeah.
Because even though it's been that long, it's still a hard-hitting story for everyone in the industry. So that's going to be interesting. We'll probably, maybe out there on the red carpet doing some stuff. I'm trying to figure out what I got going on, but I think it'll be, I'm interested to see what happened and how they present it versus the Hollywood version. I think it'd be good.
Yeah, that trailer looks like they put together a good story to represent it.
Yes. So let's do that and get random. Let's get random with Randy.
Okay. Let me ask you this. When you go out to eat,
yes,
does it annoy you? You and your wife going out, you got a special dinner planned, and there's kids hollering at the next table.
Man, get them kids out of there.
So you might pick a place specifically because you think you're going to get away from these kids.
Yes, I would. Okay. I would. And I'm before you get mad at me, yes, I have kids, and yes, he was a turd, and we couldn't go out to eat anywhere because he'd scream and cry the whole time. So, yes, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
So there is a restaurant.
Okay.
In Georgia.
Georgia.
So it's kind of a drive, but maybe other restaurants will pick up this trend.
Okay.
That they are adding $50 for children's behavior to the parents' bills.
Huh.
Yeah. It's popped up in some of their Google reviews.
Okay.
One parent said that the $50 was added because of his kid's behavior, but he insists his children were fine and they were quiet the whole time.
That's what Karen always says.
I mean, we weren't there, so I don't know. But he also says they were there with some other families, and there were 11 children between 3 and 8-year-old. I think 11 kids together. Y'all weren't quiet.
There was no one was quiet. You were throwing stuff. You were dropping stuff on the floor, coloring on the walls.
I mean, a $50 surcharge for bad children. I mean, I like the idea behind it, that they're trying to discourage that and keep everything calm. But maybe they just need more advance warning, make a big sign on the door or something, so you know ahead of time.
Just to let you know. I did see something a while back about restaurants that were adult-only restaurants. There was no kids restaurants. And people threw a fit about that. I was like, well, you want to take your screaming kids somewhere, go to McDonald's, throw them in the ball pit or something. But this restaurant in particular that you are speaking of, I did a little Googling, Google is your friend, and it looks like a restaurant you should not take your kids to. It looks like a resort on a river, like you're eating over a flowing river.
So families
doesn't look like a place. I mean, I guess if it's a resort style area and you're camping out there or whatever, but it doesn't look like a place that you want to take a kid to. Maybe they're gonna fall in the river. But it was a nice looking place. The menu wasn't too bad. They had a good variety on the menu, because that's what I thought when I had seen that. I was like, what does this place look like? Because is it a place that is enticing your kids to go with, hey, the kids are like, hey, we want to go eat over here.
Yeah.
But when I pulled up, I was like, this is not a kid's restaurant.
Yeah, it's like I like the idea behind it, but you know, maybe they should just go straight to the saying no kids. No children. They don't even have to argue over were they well-behaved or not. Yeah. Just no kids.
No kids. Kid-free restaurants. Google it. Yeah. What else happened? What else did you do?
This is also kind of restaurant-related, and I feel like it's a trend because White Castle is not the only place doing it, but they're the recent ones to make the news about the robots taking
over
some of the jobs. Yeah. Flippy 2.
Flippy.
Flippy 2 is a robot that they have. He's been tested out. And they're going to start introducing more robots nationwide. Okay. But I don't know. See, I don't go into fast food restaurants that often, so I don't know how I would feel about going in and speaking to a robot. I mean, I do know a lot of places do have the screens that you can order from. I kind of like that, honestly, because then I know it goes in the way I want.
It may just be a screen. I know. I did hear of Tex, old Tex from the show. He did tell me about going to Fort Worth one time to a – I think it was McDonald's, and it was like that. And you went into the kiosk thing, and you had to order your food right there, and then a robot brought it out to your table.
Cool.
And I was like, I'm gonna check this out.
Yeah, kind of a I guess it could be fun at first, but after a while, once it starts to go to the wrong tables, or there's a million ways that the robot could go wrong.
It's like, where are you going with my burger? I need my Big Mac. I don't need Big Mac. What I need to do is go drive east Texas. Here I come, heading that way. But before we skedaddle out of here, we did mention Bass Reeves is out there. First two episodes are out on Paramount Plus. Go watch it. Check it out. I believe it's going to be another home run for Taylor Sheridan. Take a gander at this and see if you want to tickle your eyes with it.
You a lawman or an outlaw?
Bit of both, I reckon.
Loved one's body?
I need a man with a good gun and a straight spine. You up for the task?
I wouldn't be sitting here my Sunday best if it wasn't.
Around these parts, we might be men. They're just killers. All thieves.
I took an oath to protect everyone.
I ain't about to quit this. You find a home for yourself, what would you do to hold on to it, to protect it?
You got to the count of five to get the hell off my land.
Lady, you got two shells in that bird killer.
Then I just shoot you twice, just to be certain.
How do I get to do what you do?
You're loyal, and you ain't afraid of much.
But the real power lies beneath the badge. Ready to ride?
I thought you'd never ask.
I'm warning you, your wicked days are done.